It was a perfect storm for fire. Several factors converged on the Hawaiian island of Maui 2 weeks ago, including unusually dry conditions, low humidity, and strong winds from Hurricane Dora that were at that time several hundred miles out into the Pacific Ocean, but were still impacting the weather there in Hawaii. These conditions caused wildfires to erupt in the early morning hours of August the 8th, sweeping through the town of Lahaina on Maui. 80-mile-an-hour winds swept down the mountain and pushed that fire through the town, through the streets, igniting homes and buildings in its path. Residents who were caught unaware in the middle of the night had to run for their lives. Many of them didn't make it. Some were burned alive in their homes, some even in their cars as they tried to escape. Others jumped into the ocean to try to evade the flames. I personally can't think of a worse way to die than to be burned alive. I mean, there's a lot of ways you can go, a lot of horrible ways. That's got to be one of the worst. I certainly can't imagine anybody that would choose that fate. Until I open my Bible into Daniel chapter 3, and I invite you to do the same. Daniel chapter 3. I confess that the title of this series, When the Heat is On, coming out of the book of Daniel, was inspired by this very story. If you grew up in Sunday school like I did, you probably remember Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and the fiery furnace. I mean, that story's got enough drama to keep the attention of a young child. And we learned about what happened to those courageous young men. You know, as I grow older and as I grow in my faith, what impresses me now is not the rescue, not the fact that the fire did not burn them up. Spoiler alert, I'm getting ahead of the story, which you probably already know. But it's more about their courage. The incredible statement of faith they make. I'm not sure there's a stronger statement of faith anywhere in Scripture than what you're going to see in Daniel chapter 3. And it may surprise you. What we learn from them is that when the heat is on, we need courageous affirmation. We need to stand up for our faith in spite of the consequences. So we begin in Daniel chapter 3 with the diabolical requirement from King Nebuchadnezzar. We're told in that opening verses, King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold 90 feet tall, 9 feet wide. Just take a moment and imagine that. 90 feet tall, 9 feet wide. We're not exactly told what the image was. I'm guessing it was probably an image of him, the best that the sculptors could make at that time. You might remember in the previous chapter that Nebuchadnezzar had a dream. He had a recurring dream that really bothered him. He called all of his advisors in and said, look, tell me this dream and tell me what it means. And they said, well, tell us the dream and we'll tell you what it means. He says, no, I want you to tell me what the dream was and then tell me what it means. And they're like, sorry, king, we can't do that. Nobody can. They were wrong. Daniel came along and said, I'll tell you the dream and I'll tell you the interpretation. Your dream was you saw an image of a man. The head was gold, the arms and the chest were silver, the hips and legs were of bronze, and the feet were bronze mixed with iron or clay. And then he said, you, King Nebuchadnezzar, are the head of gold. After you will come another empire, not quite as impressive, silver, and after them another and another. But then eventually this rock coming out of nowhere is going to knock the image down and it's going to grow up, and that's really the kingdom of God. Well, I think the only thing Nebuchadnezzar heard in what Daniel said was the head of gold, which was him. And he decides, well, why just a head of gold? I'm going to have the whole thing of gold. So he builds this immense statue of himself. And then he calls all of the government officials, the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, which, by the way, is probably in rank order. Starting, the satraps were the highest and then working their way down. They were all invited to come and attend the dedication of this statue. It was the kind of invitation that you could not turn down, if you know what I mean. So they all came, and they stood before it. Then the herald loudly proclaimed, "This is what you are commanded to do, O peoples, nations, and men of every language." Keep that phrase in mind because it gives a hint as to why he's doing this. "As soon as you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, and pipes, and all kinds of music, you must fall down and worship the image of gold King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. Whoever does not fall down and worship will immediately be thrown into the blazing furnace." So it's pretty simple. Here is a statue. When you hear the music play, you fall down and you worship the statue, or else you get thrown in the fiery furnace. So it's not a surprise that we read in verse 7, "Therefore, as soon as they heard the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, and all kinds of music, all the peoples, nations, and men of every language fell down and worshiped the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up." Now, this king, known to modern historians as Nebuchadnezzar II, was one of the greatest and longest ruling monarchs of Mesopotamia. He ruled Babylon from 605 BC to 562. His name is mentioned some 90 times in the Old Testament, more than any other foreign king. And he's well known in secular history as, again, one of the greatest ancient kings. The city of Babylon was considered one of the seven wonders of the world back in the day. He was a great builder as well as a great conqueror. And at the time of the Babylonian Empire, it was the largest empire the world had ever seen. Now, it may seem very strange to us as we're going through the book of Daniel. You go from chapter 2, where Daniel tells Nebuchadnezzar of this dream, and Nebuchadnezzar's falling all over himself saying, "Oh, the God of Daniel is the greatest. The Most High God is the great revealer of mysteries, and you know, everybody should worship this God." You turn one page and he's got an idol set up of himself? Really? Well, what happens in the space of turning from chapter 2 to chapter 3 probably did not happen immediately in time. In fact, in the Greek version of the Old Testament called the Septuagint, chapter 3 begins in the 18th year of King Nebuchadnezzar. Chapter 2 happened in the second year, so 16 years had elapsed. So some time had taken place. And what happens as time goes on? We tend to forget. Especially when, as Nebuchadnezzar was, he was very successful. During those years, he was conquering everybody. He was expanding the borders of his empire. He was bringing more and more people into his realm. And that might give us an idea why he would do something like this. I had mentioned earlier, note where it says that the people, all peoples, nations, and men of every language. It was not just one group of people that were part of his empire. He had conquered all of these lands, all of these nationalities. They were all brought together. I think he's trying to unify them. Okay, you all have your own customs, you all speak different languages, but if I can get you to worship one God, you'll all have that in common, and I can unify my empire. Very likely that's what Nebuchadnezzar had in mind. And so we see how all of these officials are invited to come, and then they're given the instructions. When you hear the music, you bow down. Everybody start standing up, but when you hear the music play, get on your face before this God and worship this image. Don't miss that. This is not just a matter of changing from standing to kneeling. You are worshiping this God. And if you do not, you will be thrown into a blazing, fiery furnace, which I'm sure was just off to the side. It was right there, either next to or not too far away from this image. Maybe the fiery furnace was used in smelting the gold to make the image. Well, I don't know. But it was there, and that was the threat. And the threat worked because verse 7 says, everybody did it. Now, the music, they go into kind of great detail about these instruments, the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipes, all kinds of music. It seems to be a combination of wind and stringed instruments. Some of them they're able to identify as like an animal's horn. Some of the stringed instruments like the zither and the lyre, the harp, they've got an idea. It's the last one that's interesting. The NIV calls it pipes. Some of your Bibles will even say bagpipes. I didn't realize Nebuchadnezzar had conquered Scotland back then, but I guess he did. You ever heard bagpipes play in person? I'm sorry, they're obnoxious. You got this, we had a guy in my home church that played bagpipes, bless his heart, and one day he decided to invite some of his friends. We had 7 bagpipes inside the church. I think my ears are still ringing. Yeah, loud. Nobody was going to mistake the fact that music was playing. And when the music played, everybody bowed down. Or did they? See, in verse 8, we read about the daring refusal. At this time, some astrologers came forward and denounced the Jews. They said to King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. You have issued a decree, O king, that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, pipes, harp, and all kinds of music must fall down and worship the image of gold, and that whoever does not fall down and worship will be thrown into a blazing furnace. But there are some Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon. Mark those words too. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who pay no attention to you, O king. They neither serve your gods nor worship the image of gold you have set up. You have 3 men that did not cooperate. Out of all of these people, they stuck out like sore thumbs. And I said, note that phrase. These 3, O king, whom you appointed over Babylon. That actually happened at the end of chapter 2. After Daniel had revealed the dream and the interpretation, he was promoted to one of the satraps. He was one of the 3 highest-ranking officials below the king himself. And then he asked that his friend Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be promoted in the province of Babylon. 16 years later, the guys who got passed over on that promotion are still remembering it. Hey, king, remember those guys you passed over us for? Yeah, they're not worshiping your idol. They get running off. My guess is they knew it was coming. They probably knew these guys, because of their faith in God, were not going to worship any image. And as they've got their face on the ground, they're probably looking up and saying, yep, there they are, still standing. So they go running off to the king. First, here's the first time you've mentioned tattletales, right there in the Bible. Yeah. Oh, king, you got to see. The three guys that are not worshiping. What are you going to do about it? You know what you're going to do about it. You said you're going to throw them in the furnace. And the king reacted as we might expect. Verse 13, furious with rage, Nebuchadnezzar summoned Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So the three men were brought to the king. And the king, Nebuchadnezzar, said to them, is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the image of gold I have set up? Notice, he's maybe giving them, if not the benefit of the doubt, a second chance, right? He says, now, when you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipes, and all kinds of music, if you are ready to fall down and worship the image I made, very good. Second chance. Let's try this again. Maybe you didn't understand. Maybe you didn't hear. But if you do not worship it, you will be thrown immediately into a blazing furnace. Then what God will be able to rescue you from my hand? Don't forget those words either. Now, what this was is very simply protest through civil disobedience. This is deliberate personal resistance to a government decree that violates God's standards. We're not going to do it. You see this time and time again throughout the Bible and throughout history, where people say, no, we are not going to comply, because in the words of Peter in Acts chapter 5, verse 29, we ought to obey God rather than men. And that's exactly what these three are doing. So here they're standing before a furious king and before the fury of the fire, and they answer with one of the most beautiful expressions of faith you will find anywhere in the Bible. Verse 16, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. You want to talk about some sanctified guts? There it is. We don't have to explain ourselves. We don't need a second chance. We understood perfectly what the expectation was. You can save yourself the orchestra fee. You don't have to strike up the band one more time. We get it. Notice. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to save us from it, and he will rescue us from your hand, O king. Wow. Man, that is faith. I mean, you've got the fiery furnace is right there. I mean, they could see it. They might even be able to feel it. It's right there. And the king, he gets his way. I mean, you know, you can't. There's no Supreme Court in ancient Babylon that you could appeal to. What the king said went. King says, you're going in the furnace, you're going in the furnace. And remember how the king said, what God's going to save you then? They said, our God's going to save us. We know that he can save us. He will deliver us out of your hand. And you say, man, that's great faith. You ain't heard nothing yet. That's not the great faith. The great faith is what they said next. Look at verse 18. But even if he does not, we want you to know, O king, we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up. That, my friends, is faith. I believe that's the strongest statement of faith you will find anywhere in the Bible. Because anybody would have faith in God if they were guaranteed to be spared the fiery furnace. If you were absolutely sure that God was going to deliver you from whatever problem it was, Where's the faith? That's just a sure thing. True faith says, regardless of the outcome, I am going to stay true to my God. Because there's an awful lot of people that have faith that says, oh God, if you deliver me, I'll be faithful to you. Oh God, when you answer this prayer, I'll go to church on Sunday. I'll never forget several years ago when the Chicago Cubs finally won the World Series, Game 7 and extra innings, and right after that game was over, I started seeing these memes popping up on Facebook saying, to all you Cub fans who are praying in the 10th inning, church is on Sunday at 10 o'clock. Because you better believe there were a whole lot of people saying, oh God, if you let them win, I'll go to church on Sunday. Yeah, they didn't. That's not faith. Faith says, I know what my God can do, but regardless of what he does, I'm going to trust him anyway. That's faith. That's the faith of these men. They weren't presuming on God. And that's another thing that I hear a lot of in the name of faith. I have faith. God, I denounce this illness. I denounce this disaster. I speak against it. It's not going to happen. Are you God? Since when are you declaring what's going to happen and not going to happen? At that point, God becomes a genie in the bottle, and when I rub and say the magic words, he has to fulfill my commands. That ain't God. Our God is sovereign. He will do what he wills. We do not go to God and say, this is what you're going to do. That's presumption. That's not faith. Don't let anybody ever tell you that if you have enough faith, God's going to give you what you want. That's not faith. Never has been, never will be. Faith is saying, I trust you, God, no matter what. That's faith. And that takes guts. When you're standing, when you're making a stand for God and you say, regardless of the outcome, I'm standing for God. Because we know the rest of the story, right? And we're going to get to it in a minute. We know what happens with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And there's a reason why, which I will point out. But it doesn't always end that way. God's people are not always delivered from earthly trials. God's children are not always healed. God's children are not always protected from crashes and other accidents. We don't always live happily ever after on this earth. You see that in Hebrews chapter 11. In fact, let's turn there for a moment. It's not on a slide, so it's okay, guys. Hebrews chapter 11. This whole chapter is often called the Hall of Fame of Faith, right? And you have all these Old Testament characters who exercise such great faith. And we get to verse 32. You can tell this, whoever wrote this was a preacher, because he's running out of time. What more shall I say? I don't have time to tell about Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, Samuel, and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised, who shut the mouths of lions, probably Daniel, who quenched the fury of the flames, probably these three guys here, and escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned to strength, and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies. Women received back their dead, raised to life again. Yes, faith, victory, we get what we want, right? Keep reading. Others were tortured and refused to be released so they might gain a better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging. Some, still others, were chained and put into prison. They were stoned. They were sawed in two. They were put to death by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. Not everybody gets the miracle. Not everybody is spared. The book of Acts records how Peter is locked up and he's going to be executed the next day, and overnight an angel comes and the chains fall off and the doors open and he's miraculously released, and we're like, yes, that's great. But earlier in that chapter, James was put to death by the sword. What do we do with that? And I've actually heard preachers say, well, if the Christians had had a prayer meeting going on, then James wouldn't have been killed either. Really? Where's that? You don't think that Luke would have wrote that if that were the truth? No. The truth is, God can and sometimes does deliver us from whatever we face, and sometimes he doesn't. And either way, he is still God. That's where our faith lies. Even if he does not, O King, we're not going to bow. That's the kind of faith that's going to get us through when the heat is on. You say, why would they make such a big deal? You know, come on. You're in Babylon. Do what the Babylonians do, right? You know, they could have been saying, I'm bowing on the outside, but I'm standing on the inside. That's not faith. That's compromise. No, they remembered what God had said. Because in Exodus chapter 20, what we know of as the Ten Commandments, the second commandment says, you shall not make for yourself an idol in form of anything, in heaven above or on earth beneath or in the waters below. You shall not bow down to them or worship them. Why? For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God. That's what they remembered. That's the law they were going to obey, not Nebuchadnezzar's, because they have a higher authority. That's faith. I mean, they could have compromised. They could have been said, well, you know, everybody else is doing it. You know, our position demands that we obey. We can do more good by living instead of being thrown into the fiery furnace. But you know, true faith doesn't look for loopholes. It simply obeys God and knows he will do what is best. Faith rests on commands and promises, not arguments and explanations. God says do it, you do it. That's faith. Regardless of the outcome. These men give us a full balanced picture of faith. God is able. But if he doesn't, we know what God can do, but we also know God is sovereign. And sometimes his ways are higher than our ways and his thoughts than our thoughts. He might have a better idea. So we're going to let God be God. Belief in God does not always mean it turns out our way. But faith says, I'm going to obey no matter what. I heard a great story this last week by Oz Guinness. Tells a story back in Russia during the days of the Soviet Union. And the Soviet Union was trying to stamp out all religion. Communism, by its very character, is atheist. And they sent KGB agents into a Russian Orthodox church. And they found an old woman who was kissing the feet of a life-size statue of Christ on the cross. And this agent goes up to this old woman and says, Babushka, which is grandmother, are you also prepared to kiss the feet of our beloved General Secretary of the Great Communist Party? And she turned and said, why, of course.
but only if you crucify him first. Yeah.
That's faith. That's saying, no matter what you do to me, I am going to do what's right. I am going to stay true to God. Our faith in God may lead us to a daring refusal. Now, the rest of the chapter records the divine rescue. And I know I've got the verses up there, but I'm going to give you the short version. Nebuchadnezzar is so mad, he says, "Heat up the fire. Make it 7 times hotter." And people say, "That's impossible." No, they had these bellows that would pump air into the fire, make it hotter. He probably had 7 bellows going. That's why he said 7 times hotter. He got the strongest of his soldiers to take Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, tie them up with ropes, with all of their clothes on, throw them into the furnace, which they do. In doing so, the men, the soldiers who threw them into the furnace, the heat was so intense that it killed them. They died from the heat as they're throwing Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego into the fiery furnace. And in moments, Nebuchadnezzar looks in. He doesn't hear screams and cries. He doesn't smell burning flesh. He looks inside, and these guys are walking around in the fire. And then he notices there's a fourth person in there that looks like a son of the gods. I know a lot of people say it was Jesus. I'm not so sure. I think it was an angel. That's what he identifies it as later. But regardless, here's the thing. The only thing that was burned up was the ropes that was binding them. It was the only thing that was burned up. Nebuchadnezzar says, "Hey, get out here." And all of the people come around. They got to see this. And the guys come out, and they don't even smell like smoke. Their clothes haven't been burnt. Their hair isn't singed. They don't even smell like smoke. What is happening? And then Nebuchadnezzar says, "Oh, praise be to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. If anybody says anything against them, they'll be cut to pieces and their houses will be torn down," blah, blah, blah. And he promoted them again, which they're probably thinking, "Thanks, but no thanks. I mean, come on, you got us in this problem before." God came through. Why? I believe it's because of the gauntlet that was thrown down by Nebuchadnezzar. What kings or what God is going to be able to save you from my hand? And Almighty God said, "Watch me." You don't throw down a challenge to God like that and he doesn't take it up. I think that's why he spared them. Nebuchadnezzar is so arrogant. "No one's going to save you from my hand." God says, "Yeah, watch this." And he did. But that doesn't mean he always will. And when he doesn't, it's not because he cares about that person less. It's not have anything to do with the amount of faith that they had. Here's the thing about Christianity. You don't have to be a great man or woman of faith. You don't have to be a man or a woman of great faith. You need to be a man or a woman of faith in a great God. That's where it comes down to. The greatness has nothing to do with us. It has everything to do with him. And God is so great that he can take disaster and bring it to his glory. He can take 5 young missionaries who had their lives ahead of them and allow them to be murdered on the beach of the very people they're trying to reach. And in a very short time, that whole tribe has come to Christ. Only our God could do that. Could God have spared them? Sure, he could have. But he had a better idea that blows our minds. So what does this teach us today? Daniel 3 teaches us that God is sovereign. And because God is sovereign, we put our faith in him as we stand before the fire. For them, it was literal. For us, it may be figurative. Maybe it's the fire of peer pressure. Maybe it's the fire of being accepted. Maybe it's the fire of complying to governmental laws. Maybe we're not there yet, but one day we may be. What are we going to do? True faith will always enable us to stand firm when we face the fiery trials of life. But what this story does not teach us is that we will always be protected or delivered from the fiery trials. The strength of our faith does not ensure a happy outcome. But here's the bottom line. God is sovereign whether the result is triumph or tragedy. Let me say that again. God is sovereign whether the result is triumph or tragedy. He's not any less God because we don't get what we want. That's true faith. Some people think that when we're protected or when we're delivered out of some horrible situation, oh, God is sovereign. Yeah, he's still sovereign even when we're not. And that's when we find out if we really trust him or if we're trusting our idea of the way things ought to be. When the bottom drops out, when the rug is pulled out from under us, we suffer some incredible defeat or hurt or loss. People come along to us and say, I thought you were a Christian. What kind of a God would do that? True faith stands and says, our God is sovereign and he knows what's best. He is the God that in the words of Job gives and he takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. God says that in all things he works for the good, but he doesn't say all things are good. There's some horrible things that happen in life. We're going to face them. Just because we're God's children does not make us immune from the pain and the loss of this life. But true faith in God is going to see us through no matter what. That is a sign of true faith, especially when the heat is on.